Good evening and welcome to On the Line. I am your host, Alex Sears. It's great to be with you again this week. Very special episode for you guys tonight. It is our back to school episode. Everybody's going back to college, going back to classes, going to deal with those liberal professors again. So to start us off tonight, got the very special guest, Cameron Wallace, first time on the show.
Hi, guys.
Joining us also for the very first time tonight is Hunter Bell. Okay, and
lagged really bad. Hey, everybody, I'm Hunter.
Welcome to the show, first time on, and joining us as always, good friend Rob Sasso.
Hey, Alec, great to be back as always.
All right, now we're just going to jump straight into it. Right now, we're going to talk campus stories, dealing with those liberal professors in the liberal classrooms. Hunter, why don't you start us off? Give us a good kind of like war story of dealing with some crazy liberals.
Okay, I have one. It was this very old lady, my fall semester, I believe. Yep. It was an English class, and we had to write our final research paper on a topic respective to our majors. Well, I am an economics major, and so I asked her if I could write mine over banks going bankrupt, and she told me that she didn't like it. I asked her if I could write over the financial crisis, and she said I wouldn't be able to find unbiased sources, so I couldn't do that one. And then she suggested the freaking gender wage gap. I couldn't help but to chuckle. I mean, right in her face, me being such a smart aleck, I shot back and said, yeah, but there's a ton of unbiased sources on the wage gap. She basically just replied with a single comment and told me I had to pick that topic. I told her that there wasn't a gender wage gap, and she ended our meeting. One of the days during classes, we had a debate. I kind of just chose to debate my points against her. She was more in the middle of lecturing. But I told her that the gender wage gap was based on decisions that female makes, like the fact that women aren't like controlling every firm. I mean, think about it. If there was a gender wage gap, all the women would hire the men, all the men would be fired and women would be hired. She told me that that wasn't true. She wouldn't even back anything up. I told her that women would take a few years off, raise kids, come back, and then they weren't making as much as the guy who they started off with, who'd also been working, 5 to 10 years for experience or whatever. And I told her that women take more days off, work less hours. And the only thing she could say to me was, that still doesn't explain why women make less than men. And we had mandatory paper individual checkups with her. And every time I'd present my paper, she'd read the first few sentences and then just take a giant red pen and just mark a giant X all through the paper. It was usually about by like the second line or, third word or something. Knew my paper was going to get a terrible grade, but didn't really care. Stubborn, hard-headed freshman. My girlfriend at the time from high school, her parents were both English professors at our hometown in University of Northern Iowa. Had both of them check over my paper and help with corrections, and I got a D. When our papers were returned to us, the girl that was next to me wrote a paper on dogs taking over the universe and got an A. After that, I was pretty livid that, mine was biased and not real, but dogs taking over the world is real. It's an English class. Why am I given a D? Because you don't agree with me. Is my formatting and grammar all that good? She refused to talk to me. So I decided I'm going to go to the head of the English department. Guess who's the head of the English department? It's her. I didn't even bother going to her at that point. I emailed the situation in my paper to the president of our university. I went to the school board and eventually was graded by a different professor, and I made an 89. And that was my story. She still hates. She comes to the grocery store that I shop at or that I work at and glares at me all the time. And it's great.
All right, yeah, that's an awesome story. That's that's pretty standard from what we hear of kind of when it comes to professors grading papers. Cam, you got a good story for us?
Well, mine's about like a paper too. So it was my sociology professor, this probably in his 70s, very old man. We had to write about like a hot topic issue sort of thing. And I chose gun control. And I had wrote, about how I don't agree that gun control is the best, way to combat these things that happen. And I cited facts. I basically, I wrote a pretty good paper, I thought. I always do good on papers. And he failed it, of course. So I went and asked him why. And he's basically said that, you know, by not advocating for gun control, I'm basically wishing death upon people, and it's not, you know, the right side to be on. And after that, it wasn't worth fighting, which I should have fought for it, but I ended up dropping the class just because I didn't want to deal with, you know, risking getting a failing grade. So
you actually just completely dropped out of the class because the professor was...
Which I shouldn't have done in hindsight. I should have stuck through it at least and tried. But I think it was my first time dealing with that sort of situation, and I didn't really know what to do. So I dropped it. I didn't feel like fighting it.
Hey, some people are more willing to take the bad grade if necessary. And you know, that's fine. And some people, you know, they care a lot about their GPA with good reason. Got to feel like they got to get into law school or whatever else. And that's fine too. It's up to the personality of whoever's making the decision and how they want to spend their semester in college. Rob, you got a story for us?
Yeah, well, it's not a paper story because I actually write the good papers, unlike Cam and Hunter. Being all serious, I don't have one of those stories, but I do feel that those are very real, and I've heard horror stories like that from my friends, and I feel out for you guys because that really sucks that you write hard and you don't get a good grade. But mine comes a couple weeks after Trump's first travel ban, or as a lot of people like to call it on my campus, the Muslim ban. And I was walking through the hall for the professors where they have their offices, and I was just minding my own business, and I was walking through and I saw this huge poster board. It had to be a 5x5 thing laminated, and it had this huge diatribe about how my school doesn't support it and how we accept everyone at our school. And it was really interesting to me because it was about a week or two after, and I'm like, my school had all this time to print it out and laminate it and get it up there, and it just felt really weird because all the professors signed it too. There was a few outcasts who decided to kind of go against the grain and say that they're being duped by it. And I thought it was really interesting that our school went out of the way to do it. But I mean, unlike a lot of other people, I don't really have to deal with a lot of that stuff on my campus. I'm kind of lucky in that sense. But I mean, there's always that one or two things that tend to get people riled up. And I saw like the kind of outreach and kind of push of the liberal side of campus, and it kind of shocks you. Like, I know these two were shocked by their essays that were written really well and graded really poorly, and I just saw my school kind of taking a stance on a very hot topic political issue when maybe it was best to avoid it.
All right, yeah, that's definitely just a little bit different than having a paper. That's more of kind of all of the professors feel like ganging up on maybe in certain students. Kind of similar, so in the similar vein, I took a political science class this past semester. It is probably the only class that I've had actual kind of debates and arguments in. Being a computer science major, politics doesn't often find its way into the classroom in most of my classes. So I sought it out myself, went to go find a politics class that I could really kind of get dirty in. And I found a class with the former Lieutenant Governor of Ohio, who was teaching it and who was a Democrat liberal through and through. Now, unlike Cam and Hunter's professors, my professor was actually very fair. I never received a bad grade on a paper for having conservative views in it. He was also very fair with kind of speaking time in class. He directed who was talking. However, what he did do was very openly and very aggressively debate with me in front of the entire class on several occasions. And would almost encourage students to kind of join him and gang up on me. And there was one or two other people that would back me up who really had my back, and we kind of bonded through that in that class. But there was several instances when we debated gun control. We debated healthcare a little bit, also climate change. And all three of these specifically, there was a lot of kind of group ganging up on the whole class. He managed to get the whole class to kind of turn on us. And there's more to those stories, but we'll get to that later. So I wanna go back to Hunter actually, because I think Hunter, you got another story for us.
Yeah, it's kind of based along the same lines of my first one. It was actually about 2-3 weeks ago or so in one of my summer classes. We're writing another paper, and we had to use empirical evidence on how banks discriminate against giving loans and charging higher interest rates toward minorities and what we need to do to stop that. And I didn't even bother this time arguing it. I basically wrote this paper in like a complete sarcastic tone and even gave my opinion in the last paragraph. And I emailed the professor and told him that I didn't agree with the fact that banks discriminate based solely on race. And he replied back and said, "Cool." And that was it. Yeah. And he's actually from India, and he's my advisor too. He's a really nice guy, but just the fact that he is making everybody write a paper essentially agreeing with him, not even giving you the option to debate why you don't think banks do that and, you know, refute the empirical evidence, is just a bunch of garbage to me.
Yeah, that's I'm surprised that was, you know, just 2-3 weeks ago. We can see even these summer school summer class teachers are kind of putting the hammer down on you guys.
Yeah, it was an online class too, so even better. A 4-week class.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
All right, I got another story kind of in the same vein. So going back to the professor that I had that would gang up on us. One of the first times we were actually having a debate, it was on, it wasn't even on identity politics. What was it? It might have been the gun control debate, I think it was, because that was right around the time when there was quite a few shootings happening, unfortunately, in America. And there was a period of time people were just kind of giving their general remarks about it, giving, there's a few differing opinions. There was not really any open debate. But all of a sudden, kind of from the back, a young lady kind of shouted out, "You know, I think it's really interesting that we're talking about gun control and you know, cops killing black people or killing minorities. But the last four people we've heard with have been straight white males." And that was coming from a student who, to my recollection, didn't speak a single other time in that class. And the professor kind of took that opportunity and jumped on that and took us off of the gun control debate and plopped us straight into identity politics and kind of just took over the rest of the class. Didn't let any other debate happen after that. Jumped on that opportunity and just kind of decided to lecture us on identity politics and how, "Oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have let four straight white males talk through that." And the entire time I'm just sitting there like, "Did you just assume my gender? Like, really? Is this what it's coming to now? It's ridiculous." All right. Hunter, you got another story for us, or were you fresh out?
Okay, I've got like a 3 and 4 kind of mixed together, and this one actually takes place right after Election Day, and our school sent out an email to every student, and I'm pretty sure all the parents too, basically saying that they were offering a safe space and counseling for any student who was terrified or felt they could not go on with life anymore. And, you know, I'm still not even sure what a safe space is exactly. Like, what happens if I go into this safe space, like feeling friendly zone, and start talking about how I'm so happy that Hillary lost? Like, what happens? Do I get beat up? Do I get arrested? I mean, is a safe space like constitutionally recognized? What happens when I ruin the safe zone for everybody? That one was just made me laugh that, I mean, I never got an email during the Obama administration asking if I was okay or, you know, a pat on the back. Granted, I don't care because you should worry that much about who the president is with how our constitution's designed. But the fourth one is actually when we got right back from school after Christmas break, we had a Black Lives Matter protest on our campus. And mind you, I go to a university called Tarleton State. It's a division of Texas A&M, and I live in Stephenville, Texas, which they call, or it's actually recognized as the cowboy capital of the world. half the time my class, people in my class show up with spurs still on and their cowboy hat, and they might as well ride their horse to school. It is about as country as you can get. We have the number one rodeo team in the nation. I mean, it's very stereotypically not like a black campus. And we had the Black Lives Matter protest, and then we actually had, you know, some of these cowboys going and like shouting terribly racist things at them. And our school actually endorsed the Black Lives Matter protest and started sending out school emails about when they were going to be, so people could just go stand there. And they're not even, I mean, they're just standing there. They don't talk to anybody. They all have tape over their mouth. And I thought it was weird that my school, you know, endorsed that. And also, I mean, the people that were shouting that stuff are terrible people. And I mean, they definitely shouldn't have been that either. But I tried to get a Students for Rubio group established. I was named the chair of our university by the state of, or by the Texas State for Rubio group to run that group. And the school basically shot me down. I went to their office multiple times and they kept making up bullcrap excuses about, oh, we lost your email. Oh, we haven't checked about that. Oh, you know, up until dang near election or for the primaries. And I think it's pathetic that our school endorses a Black Lives Matter group, but won't let me start a Students for Marco Rubio group where I'm going to get probably in Texas with Ted Cruz running 10 to 15 people max. I don't know. Blatant political bias shoved down the student's throat is wrong for either side to do it. I mean, most of these young adults, college students, will do anything or believe anything if there's a semi-decent incentive to it, like a grade. We don't need professors pushing their ideological garbage onto any student, no matter the side.
I think you nailed it right there. No kidding. We're going to go ahead and move on to our next topic, our second one for the night. We're going to talk about campus strategy, debate tactics, other kind of things that you can do on campus that will help you out when you're trying to change minds. And kind of, I'm going to go ahead and start us off here with the most important debate strategy that I try to remember is when I go into a classroom with, you know, liberal professor, even when I'm just walking through the halls, I run a conservative student club on my campus, and I'll just be getting into debates, walking around in the cafeteria pretty much. It is the thing I try to remember the most is that you are in a debate, you are not trying to convince the other person necessarily. What you're trying to do is convince all the people that are listening that you're right. That is kind of what I go into a debate thinking just about every time, because there's if you're debating somebody who knows their stuff, chances are you're not going to change their mind. Chances are you're not going to just completely stump them and they're going to flip-flop ideologies right there. You're really going after the people who are in the middle, who can look at both sides and say, oh, this one seems more logical, I'm going to go with this side. So that's the main strategy that I like to keep in mind. Rob, why don't you kick us off with another one?
Well, definitely. Obviously, when it comes to the classroom itself and not really looking about the professor, there's normally a good mix. Maybe it might be a little liberal heavy in most classes, especially when you're in liberal arts. Obviously, it's going to draw a few more people on the left side of the aisle than the right side. But either way, one thing you have to realize is that you're not going to be able to convince everybody, no matter what you say. And just the same way, people on the right aren't going to be convinced by people on the left. So you have to take that into consideration, even if you're in the majority. So take, for example, if you're in the minority, like, you could tell a bunch of people don't like your views. A good way to get into the debate is not to be kind of a hard line with your views, or not really trying to be all up in someone's face, kind of like kidding with taglines, but kind of try and ease them in by kind of saying something everyone can get around. So like, if for climate change, like, even if you don't believe that there's really anything that we could do, you could say, oh, everyone should be worried about the planet, or I really am worried about the planet, and I think we have to look at what we can do. And then you could preface it with your real argument, and then you can go into the facts and the stuff that you really want to get out there. And you preface it by being something that everyone can keep an open mind to. Same with like any other debate, whether it be taxes or minimum wage, just kind of be soft with your opening so that everyone can be receptive to your debate topic, regardless of what it is. Because if you're just going to go in there like saying facts don't care about your feelings, bro, everyone's going to be turned off by that, because it seems like you're trying to just stump everyone. And I mean, these are your peers at the end of the day, and they obviously don't want to be stumped by you. people are more than willing to have a conversation with you. There's about two or three kids in the classroom that are just going to be calling you a bigot no matter what you say. But for the 95 other percent of the kids, it's really good to reach out and kind of just be kind of softer with them and just say, listen, we can disagree, but I care about the same things you do. I just have a different solution.
Awesome. Cameron, you got any good strategies for us?
Yeah. So I think the main thing is that you need to be prepared because you know, you're the minority on campus now. And so it's okay to not know everything, but if you're going to, you know, debate with someone, at least know what you're talking about, because if you get slipped up in a lie or you make something up to try to seem better than the other person, you know, that's going to come back and have negative effects on you probably. So just be prepared, read a lot, watch the news, make up your own opinion, and then debate that way. And I do think that when you debate, it should be facts, but it should also be feelings. I think you can get a mix of both, and that's how you really, you know, you don't have to convince people, but at least make them, you know, understand where you're coming from.
Awesome. And to kind of jump on top of that, when you say, you know, be prepared, do your research, also pick your battles. Right. If you're not, you know, super sure-footed on a topic, just kind of sit through it, let it blow over. It is better to have kind of the authority on other topics and be seen as strong and knowledgeable in those than to completely just crap out and show your hand on a topic that you're completely unprepared for, and then people no longer see you as either a valuable source of information or someone who is as intellectually based as they should seem. Hunter, you got a good tactic for us?
Really, as far as debating goes, I mean, just don't be condescending to your opponent. I mean, don't make them sound like a complete idiot all the time. I mean, if you're hitting them with a zinger, like, yeah, it's okay, you know, get your point in there, but like, stay calm, cool, collect, be happy, laugh when you can, brush it off as if it's not really that big of a deal. And like, if you run into an argument where you kind of get stuck or something, you know, admit when you're wrong. If they're disproving you with facts and stuff, say, okay, you know, you got me. Don't sit there and keep arguing a situation that you've clearly lost, because then you're going to lose all credibility and no one's going to care what you say.
Yeah, definitely. I think one thing when it comes to credibility, I know you two just hit on it. Like, I know, for example, in one of my classes, climate change was a topic, going back to it. And I read the room and basically I knew it was going to be me versus all. And like Alex said, even if I came on with them with a lot of facts and I was pretty compassionate, you know, I was not just stating facts like a robot, it kind of would have blown my credibility, because I mean, even though I might be right at the end of the day, people are going to see it's one versus all, and people aren't going to think that the one is right and the all is wrong. So it's good to know, like, when you can really convince people, because I think there are topics where people, like, will quietly agree with you, and it's hard for them to speak because they're afraid they're going to get called out. And, like, you have topics where Hunter's been, like he said, he's gone to his professor. He's really not afraid to fight it. Some people aren't like that. So it's going to be you, if you want to talk, you have to realize that there might be a handful of you in the class if you're lucky. And I think that you have to know when you want to say something, because if you don't have the facts and if you don't read other sources, because a lot of your liberal professors will not give you conservative sources. They'll give you a lot of Keynesian economics. I know for a fact in my business school, I have to read a lot of stuff where people talk about massive redistribution of minorities because they have to get the money for some reason. And if you don't watch like a Yaron Brooks lecture on free market capitalism, you might be a little lost. So it's almost better research. It's like your game planning. You know what the liberals want to say, and now you know what you want to say. So it's kind of the best of both worlds, where you can fight both battles of knowing what to say to please your liberal professor by reading your stuff, and what you can learn from getting opposing sources to what they're giving you.
And hand signals too. That one's so important. When I was watching the presidential debates, I want to say it was probably Chris Christie or someone annoying like that. You know, when they're flopping their hands all around the whole time while they're talking, like, so annoying. People don't even listen to what you're saying at that point. They're just concentrating on how irritated they are with your stupid facial expressions and your hand movements.
All right. Anybody else got got some top-notch debate strategies for us?
I think I have one more. Just to take the time to listen to the other side, because you want the same respect back. And also, it's easy to sort of get really heated in these conversations, more topics than others, but it's important to, you know, stay sort of calm, think about what you're going to say, so that way you come off as the more, I guess, you know more than they do, or at least, you know, you believe in what you say more. And I think that sometimes can have a bigger effect than what you actually end up saying.
Yeah, I think Cameron hit it right on the head where you can get really frustrated, because I know sometimes I would get really frustrated when I would be me versus all, or I just couldn't get a word in edgewise, and it was kind of like, ugh, I can't do anything about this, even though I know I have something to say. So that leads me to my final point, kind of, is join a club with a bunch of conservatives in it. It's okay to talk to people on your side, you know, with the college Republicans, YAF and YAL, all those big groups like that, they're there to help you with either finding your conservative professors on campus, finding conservative outlets where you can talk about what you want to talk about. And it's just good to hear from other people that think what you want to think. You're not putting yourself in a bubble by doing that. You're giving yourself kind of another outlet, because the chances are your classes are going to be liberal heavy, and you can balance that with a conservative club once a week. It kind of gives you the best of both worlds, where you're not think you're going crazy by being the only conservative in your class, and you're also able to talk to some friends on campus that you can meet outside of politics, because you know you obviously share common interests and values. So it's a win-win on both fronts.
All right. I'm going to wrap us up with a last quick piece of advice. I stole this directly from Ben Shapiro, the master of debating, known and loved across America and the world. Something just kind of like it's almost like a trigger for the left, I want to say, is if you're in the middle of a debate, say it's on taxes or something, and somebody's arguing for a higher rate of taxes for the rich, pull this phrase out. Just go up to them, not really, or whatever. Come at them with, oh, so you think that rich people should have to give more of their wealth, gun to their head, government saying you have to do this or else. And that's very, I guess you could say, triggering for liberals. First of all, because they don't like guns, most of them. And second of all, it makes them think, oh, I guess this is really, you know, the government forcing people to do this. So it kind of makes them switch mindsets into something that you can work with a little bit more.
Oh, crap. Maybe I'm wrong.
So, yeah, it's great stuff like that. Anybody got anything else for us tonight? No? Man, we're going to end early here. All right. Well, hey, I just want to thank all of you for joining us. Good luck going back to school. Cam, where can we find you online?
On Twitter at Cam_Wallace with 3 E's.
All right. Hunter, where can we find you?
Well, I'm only on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is HButter03, but not margarine, but like butter.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it's not butter. Exactly. HButter03.
All right. Rob, where can we find you at?
Well, I write for Lone Conservative. I'm on Twitter at RealRobertSasso. And if you are not tired of hearing Alec and I, please go over to Campus Conservative and check out our podcast. I promise you it's not boring. It's a lot of fun for that conversation. We talk about Charlottesville and his trip to Israel. I promise you, you'll really enjoy it. It's very informative.
All right. And I am Alex Sears. You can find me on Twitter at SearsAL, on LoneConservative.com. Follow Lone Conservative on Twitter as well at LO Conservative. And please do go check out the Campus Conservative podcast. You can find it on iTunes and our website. It's on SoundCloud as well. Really great stuff. Week after week, we're on a little bit of break. Rob finally coming back and hitting it hard. So go listen to our podcast this week about Israel and the alt-right. It was a real good one. And I think that's it. So thank you all for tuning in. And we'll see you maybe not next week, but we'll see you eventually. Good luck at college.
See you later, Alec. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.